But along with that, I put a kind of a stipulation of what I thought was really important. And that is that the ministry that we did, that it would have to be something that would last for 1,000 years. And what I meant by that is, and a lot of times we'll get into ministry that maybe has some short-range benefit, and that's good. Let's say we went out and we fed the poor, and that would be good, but it wouldn't be what I'd call a 1,000-year benefit. We would feed them for the day, and then the day was over. And so we talked through the idea that a 1,000-year benefit would be if they had a relationship with Christ, that, 1,000 years from now, they would still be enjoying that benefit that we brought to them. And this became, the reason for the 1,000-year concept is it's kind of a real important issue for me in my life. It's been a long time, over 30 years ago now, I had a friend I'm shortly out of high school at the time. I'm in high school, so it's back in 1979. And I have a friend who comes to Christ, and he has a brother. And through the relationship that I developed with the brother, he accepts Christ as well. And he's about actually we're at the same age, just months apart. And so I kind of, I've explained probably in other messages that it was about that time in my life, maybe a year earlier, that I really changed myself. So I was pretty new, really follower of Christ. But I was real energetic, and I wanted to really help this guy. And so I kind of mentored him, even though I was young. I kind of took him under my wing, and we spent a lot of time together. And his background was... I had a wonderful background. He had a horrible background. He was married at 16 years old, and as a guy, that doesn't happen anymore. So he had been married at 16 and had kids already, and he was 19. And so in our discussions, one time he came out with this statement. He said, Bob, he had this statement right here, and this is the guy. He said, this life is like a vapor. Next thing you know it, I'll be gone, and all that will matter is what I did for God. And that statement just really stuck with me. I thought, how true that is, that life just, it's just that fast when you really think about it. And then it's over. And what really made this stick home with me is that it wasn't much longer after this, and he did die. And so since he died, those words just embedded into my brain that it was clear to him and clear to me that what counted now for eternity was only those things that he had done for God. All of the other things in life really didn't really matter. They don't last forever. And so that really stuck strong to me. And so it got me to thinking way back then, what difference will anything that I do make in 1,000 years? And it was so impactful because this happened in July 17, 1980. I was about 20 years old, not quite. And so I was young enough and I had this friend that I was close and he had died and I had all this on my mind and I was really pursuing Christ in my life at that point, so I was just really impacted by the eternal issues, and so I made this this commitment to myself that I'm just not going to do anything unless it has 1,000-year implication, and so I was serious. So my mom asked me, for example, to mow the lawn, and I said, well, what does it matter in 1,000 years, And you might think that I was just trying to get out of the lawn cutting, right? It would sound like it coming from a 19-year-old, 20-year-old kid, but that actually really wasn't it. I was that focused on the idea that if it doesn't matter in 1,000 years, it just doesn't matter. I also, daily back then, I played basketball about every single day. I completely stopped playing basketball. And I said, if it doesn't you know, basketball's not going to matter in 1,000 years. It's an irrelevant thing. If it wasn't a Bible study, if I wasn't talking to somebody about God, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And that was strong in my heart. And although over time that dissipated, you know, and although that I think it was the way I looked at it was maybe a little immature, there was a lot of truth to it. And in fact, I think there was completely true. Only thing that really matters is what's going to matter in 1,000 years. What I didn't understand is maybe how that plays out. You know, I was young and I didn't really know how to, you know, if I had to do it now, I'd go ahead and mow the lawn and realize that certain things need to be done, even if they don't have those implications. But that's where that came from, the 1,000-year idea that if it doesn't matter in 1,000 years, then why are we going to consider doing it today? If we go to Colossians 3:1, Paul's speaking to the Colossians, and he says, "Therefore, if you have been raised with Christ," and I wanted to point out a couple things. First of all, that "if" isn't truly an "if." In the Greek language, they'll set up a statement like that, and it really means the concept of since. So the Colossians, for example, they were believers, and so it wasn't an issue of them not believing and saying, "Well, if you're a believer, then this will happen." It was saying, "No, you guys are Christians, and therefore, you have been raised with Christ." Now, they were alive still. So Paul's writing to the Colossians. They're alive. They're reading. That's why he's writing them a letter. And they're alive. And he's telling them that they have already been raised with Christ. Past tense. You have been raised with Christ. So what's going on? How come he's telling them, "Well, you've been raised with Christ"? They're not dead yet. They haven't, you know, what's going on? Well, if we backed up into the second chapter of Colossians, we'd see that they were also buried with Christ. And this is talking about our baptism. It's talking about that we are identified with Christ at the point of believing. And when we believe and are identified, we then are baptized into his death, into his burial, and into his resurrection. So we have been raised with Christ. That means everybody here that has accepted Jesus Christ into their life, we have already been raised with Christ. And that is an actual reality. Now, that doesn't mean physically in these bodies we've been raised with Christ, but what is reality anyway? I mean, reality is what is true. And what is true in God's eyes, we have been baptized, meaning we have gone through the process of dying with Christ, of being buried, and being raised. And so we all have experienced the reality that we have been raised with Christ. This is our true reality. So Paul then goes on, "So keep seeking the things above." If we have been raised with Christ and we are already with him, we have already gone, he's saying, then keep seeking it. Keep seeking the things that are above, since this is already true about you. This is not a future thing. This is already your reality. So act like it. And really, when you think about it, why settle for anything less? Why would we settle for not seeking the things above? If we have already inherited eternal life, if we've inherited heaven, and that is where we're at, then that's our reality, then why in the world would we settle for a life where we're pursuing just things down here? This is kind of old school. This is kind of, you know, we've moved on. We are now with Christ. We have that position. And it goes on to say where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. In the second verse, it says, so keep thinking about things above. Keep thinking that way. You know, one of the things I find interesting, if you ever bought a house, Have you noticed that you start living in the house before you ever get there? You know, you look at a new house and you figure out which one you're going to buy, and you start imagining yourself, you know, in that kitchen. The kitchen's got a nice refrigerator. I can see, and you dream about it. You can see, you know, I love the cupboards, and I can't wait to be on that new patio. And we can sit and we can move in. In fact, it's one of the problems when we're negotiating price on a house is that if you already move in, it's hard to back out because you want you. It's like you. It's become something you own in your heart, and you essentially in your mind, in your heart, in your emotions, you're living there. And so if the house falls through, it's a big bummer because it's like heartbreak. I was like there. I was living there, and I think that's kind of like what Paul's saying. He's saying, keep thinking about the things that above, because you already own that. That's yours. You've already died, buried, and resurrected with Christ. You own that place in heaven. So keep seeking that and keep thinking about it. Move into heaven in your heart, in your mind. Move in there. It's yours. It's not something that you have to wonder about. You already have it. In contrast, Paul says, not the things on the earth. And again, who cares about this earthly stuff? Why, you know, this is past. We got much bigger fish to fry. You know? I mean, we're like going to heaven for eternity. And why would we spend all of our heart and all of our concerns about what's going on here when what's our future is there? And so Paul's like, yeah, don't worry about the things on the earth. And he goes, you know, in 2 Corinthians, he says, for what can be seen is temporary, but what cannot be seen is eternal. And if we're wondering, well, the reason that, you know, I still have one foot down here is because, you know, this is something I can do. But if we look at this, yeah, we can, it's something that we can partake in right now, but it's just temporary. It's just that fleeting moment. It's that vapor that my friend talked about. The things that we do now will not last. And I know we know that, but we have to hear it and think about it and dwell on it. We have to let go of these things that are temporary. We have to remind ourselves daily that the things we're getting involved in are only temporary. Let's not hold on to them as though that is what life is all about. But what is cannot be seen, those are the things that matter. And so when you think about it, I want to consider for a moment, how does a heavenly mindset like I'm describing change our perspective? How does, if I truly embrace in my heart that my home is there. I've moved in my mind, in my heart, Lord, I am living in heaven. My relationship with God is the most important issue in my entire life. And I look at the earth around me and you know I care about the people and I want them to come with me to heaven, but this place it's just a temporary place. It's just made of carbon and molecules. Carbon is a molecule, but carbon and atoms and such and such. It's not my permanent place. It's not what I want. If I really have that mindset, how will that change our perspective on things in life? I mean, consider it how that changes the entire way that we look at wealth. If wealth is not something that if our eternal perspective is not here, but there, when we look at the wealth that we have down here, we see it much differently. We see it maybe as a tool. We see it as a way to help others with our wealth, to point them to God. But we don't think that we're making a place and we're feathering our nest and this is where it's going to be. And that's difficult. It's difficult for me not to build that house and keep dreaming and dreaming and dreaming and thinking that I'm going to forever live in that house, and then I'm going to upgrade to another house, and I'm going to get that car, and I'm going to be happy, and I keep dreaming this dream of what if I get the right stuff and I get the right circumstances, how then finally life is going to be happy. Because I won't view this as my home. It's not the point. I've already moved on. You know, I'm doing this just as a temporary. It's like I'm on vacation. You know, when you go on vacation, you don't spend all your money on the hotel because you're leaving it behind. We get it when we're on vacation. We don't want to spend it all on the car, the hotel, whatever, because we're getting back home. Well, that's actually the reality of this home. It's not what it's all about. It's just a stepping stone to that eternal place. So when we need to view our wealth as a utility to help others, but not thinking that we are staying. How about self-esteem? When we really view from the eternal position that we are with God forever and ever in a loving relationship, if we really, really moved in and I'm with God and I start, you know, in my mind, I feel it. God, I'm with you. And you got your arm around me. I mean, you love me. What's my self-esteem going to be like? Am I worried what the guy across the street thinks of me? I mean, he's just a guy. Where I have the God of the universe saying, I am your father. I love you. That eternal mindset changes my whole self-esteem picture. How about tragedies? You know, we have all these fires going on all over the state of Colorado. And the viewpoint that, I don't know what your viewpoint is. I think there could be a lot of viewpoints. Some could be like, oh man, our state, it's burning up. It's not going to be, you know. Well, is that God's eternal? And when we've been in heaven for 1,000 years, are we going to look back and say, oh man, that, you know, that forest, that, I mean, it'd be like, that's just a truly a vapor up in smoke, huh? Shows you the temporary nature of it all. But even so, it's not tragedy of any nature. We will see in the eternal state that tragedy is really, the real tragedies are those who don't have a relationship with Christ, because that is what lasts 1,000 years. Anything that lasts 1,000 years is what real tragedy is. But most of the things that we experience and we consider to be tragedy has to do with our circumstances. It has to do with things that won't last. And so we will view those differently. Instead of seeing the fires as just a tragedy because people have lost their homes and things, we will maybe see it as an opportunity to help people and use that opportunity to guide them to God, to use that as an opportunity to demonstrate our love, to use it as to see tragedy, to see events in this life that we just really don't like. We will see them all as opportunities to point people to God, to point our own hearts to God. Or how about last, political issues? You know, there's so much wringing of hands about, you know, the Obamacare, for example. When we look at from the eternal state, it's just a law, just some money. You know, what did Christ say with the denarius? He said, you know, pay to Caesar what's Caesar, pay to God what's God's. It's just so small in the big picture. How about the way we see homeless people? So often we see, I know so many Christians that see a homeless person and all they think about is the political ramifications. Well, if I give them this, and if they're figuring out, you know, whether it's personal responsibility or whether it's responsibility, and think about it from the eternal state. What matters is the heart of that person. What matters do they have a relationship with God? From the eternal point of view, it's what matters is do I love them? You know, not whether or not I get them off the streets or they you know, all of those issues, those are temporary issues. And what the government does is one thing, but what we do is we need to love people. I don't know what that looks like, and I'm not saying how it ought to be and how the government ought to be and all of that. I'm just saying if we look from an eternal point of view, from a heavenly, from a godly point of view, then I think that we see people as entities that are only staying in these bodies for a limited amount of time, where we, because of our love for others, wish to impact them and wish to point them to a relationship with God. So I guess I just want to close with a challenge, and that is that, number one, we live in reality. Now, we might say, well, reality is what I can see around me, but not really. You know, we look around me and I don't see, I just see bodies. I don't actually know that anybody's in them. I cannot prove anybody's in there. That's, if we were to say, you know, what you can check with a, you know, scientifically, I can't prove anybody's even in this room. And yet we all know we're here, don't we? We do. Because reality is a complex thing. The spiritual reality that you all know exists is far beyond anything that we can touch and feel and measure, and yet we know it's all true. And the reality of eternity and the reality that we have died and have been buried and are with God in his baptism, in his death, burial, and resurrection is how I want to say that. That is our reality. Our reality is that we have a place in heaven right now. We already own it. Move in. That's reality. Secondly, I challenge us that we keep thinking about the things above, not the things on the earth. Move into heaven now. Live a life that matters. And let's impact people, not just for today or tomorrow, but let's live a life that impacts people for 1,000 years. And we can do that. We can have that kind of impact on this world if we share our relationship with Jesus Christ. If we give people a hope of eternal life and explain to them what that's all about. And we do that through loving them. We do that through sharing our faith, through explaining things about the Bible. We do that so many different ways. But the point is that we need to focus on the things that we do that will make that eternal impact. Let's close in prayer. Dear Father, I thank you for the time at camp. I thank you for the kids that came to know you, and I pray for the commitment that so many of them made. I thank you for their hearts and their desire to follow after you, and I thank you for the high schoolers' desire to be involved in a ministry to make a difference for 1,000 years, Lord. And I pray that we will take on 1,000-year perspective, that we will take on life and not just what's going on around us all the time, but what will make a difference over the long, long term, Lord. Help us to trust you. Help us to be willing to let go of these small things in life that take our hearts, that still our desire to serve you and let go and just pursue you with all of our hearts. In your name, amen.